Hello, welcome to Strange Love of Movies. My name is Olivia Martinez, and I'm here with my co-hosts Oscar and Emily Martinez. And today we are talking about Killers of the Flower Moon, the latest Martin Scorsese film. This is a big deal, not only because it's a new Martin Scorsese film, but also because we've only ever reviewed one other Martin Scorsese film, and it happened to be our very first episode, Raging Bull, which is kind of funny that now we're here, 3 years later. Pretty crazy.
Well, it took him a while to make this particular film, too, so it's appropriate that it would take us a while to get back to
Mr.
Scorsese.
Marty. Yeah, and I mean, it took him a while because of the pandemic, but it also took him a while because this movie is beefy. It is 3.5 hours long.
Yes, when you think about epics, it's definitely an epic in every sense of the word, in terms of length and scope, and it's just pretty amazing what he's done. It's really well done.
And I think it's probably been talked about way too much already, but the length is something that has been in much discussion over the past few weeks because people are deciding, oh, should I see it in theaters or should I wait for it to come to Apple TV? And we all recommend seeing it in theaters if it's still out by the time this podcast is out, just because it is so immersive and it went by incredibly quickly. I mean, we were all really scared by the runtime. I'll be the first to admit.
Yes, it scared me going in, but I did not notice the length.
Me
I mean,
neither.
I didn't check my watch and I wasn't really the story held up so well and it was just told in such a compelling way that you stayed in it.
And Mom, you're going to be our resident Killers of the Flower Moon expert because you've actually read the book, which I hopefully over Christmas break I'll read it because I'm very curious and to learn more about the story. But how do you remember the book very well? Like,
I do. Okay. I mean, I've read quite a few books since, so I don't remember it as well as I should. But the movie was different from the book, but it didn't vary from the book. I mean, in other words, he didn't try to tell the different story or change the characters a lot. But the movie focused more on the Osage and what they went through and their story, whereas the book had quite a bit more of the kind of detective story.
The founding of the FBI.
Yeah, the founding of the FBI. So but I think he was wise. I mean, can you imagine how long if he'd really had to include all the FBI stuff too?
6.5 hours.
As it was, he had the FBI come in and they were an important part of resolving the issues, but they weren't the center of the story.
Yeah, I thought that, so I remember you telling me about this book years ago, and I remember you saying, like, oh, this was the first case the FBI worked on. So then when I heard that Jesse Plemons was playing the main FBI agent, I was like, well, he's going to be a big part of this movie. He didn't come out until, like, I don't know, 2 hours, 45 minutes in. And it was just like crazy to see him. I had totally forgot that was a part of the story just because this story is so focused on the story of the Osage people and the love story between Leo DiCaprio and Lily Gladstone. And their characters are named Ernest and Molly.
And love story in quotes.
Hey, they loved each other. Or she loved him.
Yes. And I think he loved her
yeah.
too. But he loved many more.
Toxic love.
Well, and I think there were almost as many articles about the movie before the movie came out and during the movie and after the movie. And one of them that came out was they didn't want it to be a white man saves a Native Americans type film. And I think it's stronger for that because it wasn't, you know, movies are a reflection of what really happened. And this really happened. That's so depressing to think this country did that, you know, to mistreatment of the Native Americans. However, I think it's a stronger movie for it because we've seen those other movies where people come in and the federal government comes in or somebody comes in and saves the day. And in this case,
they save the day for like 15
yeah,
minutes.
They kind of do, but they kind of don't.
And a lot of the courage was on the part of the victims, really. I mean, mm-hmm. they were the ones who really called attention to the situation. And if they hadn't, probably the federal government would have just kind of looked the other way and nothing would have happened. But it's an amazing story to think that it was a conspiracy, but it was even broader than it was a conspiracy, but it was almost like a it was just a group of random people.
And they were all dumb.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the movie did a good job showing
exploited. That. Yeah. And I mean, anybody who knows about Native Americans knows how much they've been exploited in so
yeah.
many different situations through the centuries. This was just the latest because, without giving anything away, basically the Osage had they found oil on the land that the Osage owned, and this was the early 1900s, right? And other people tried to kind of take advantage.
They certainly did, and that is where Leonardo DiCaprio and Robert De Niro come in, because Robert De Niro plays Leonardo DiCaprio's uncle, and this is their first film together since This Boy's Life, which was basically where Leonardo DiCaprio was discovered,
yeah,
right?
I think De Niro directed that movie, and he discovered DiCaprio and cast him.
That was 30 years ago. Isn't that crazy?
It is, and it's just amazing, because it's also, well, I guess Irishman was the, rekindling of the De Niro and Scorsese duo, but having Leo in there too, because Leo kind of replaced De Niro in the early 2000s. And yeah, it was just awesome to see that. They both had the same scowl on their face the entire time. They look like grumpy cat.
You want to talk about the chin right now?
You can talk about the chin if you want.
Well, I can't do it. You can do it.
Well, I can't do it on like...
But we're on Twitch right now.
No, we're not. I can do it really well.
Show us the chin here.
She captured it. For anybody who can't see this, the Leonardo DiCaprio chin in this was it Ernest? Is that
Ernest,
the character's
name?
Yeah, Ernest. He was something else.
He really was. And he was maybe one of the most evil characters in a Scorsese film, yet you felt not bad for him. I never actually felt that bad for him, but I was just like looking at him like, you are the stupidest.
He was weak.
Person. So weak.
Just weak. I mean, he was greedy, and his uncle played on his greed, but also he was kind of afraid of his uncle and
afraid of everyone.
Yeah. And yet was willing to kind of go out on a limb and do some really
terrible things
in order to get what he wanted.
I know.
Yeah, and the title, I mean, it really reflects. That's what it was about. They really did show who the killers of the Flower Moon were. You know, these people who, none of them too bright, but just greedy as all get out. And it was just so casual, some of the violence that they inflicted on some of these people. And
people that they knew.
Yeah.
Not strangers.
Yeah,
that's one of the most menacing aspects, is that this was really kind of domestic.
It was a community.
Domestic crimes, but not even like out of any emotion.
No.
It wasn't like a husband murdering a wife because he was angry and drunk. It was with calculation that he wanted her
the land rights.
Yeah.
And yeah, Robert De Niro's character is kind of like the white friend to the Native Americans. Like, he's just kind of the old man who's has had a good relationship with the Osage people for his entire life. He's wealthy, but not as wealthy as them, and they all trust each other. And I don't want to spoil anything, but I don't know if he should be trusted.
Well, Lily Gladstone was amazing.
I know.
She
we need to
fantastic.
Talk about her.
She was great as Molly, Ernest's wife, and just so stoic. And she didn't have that much dialogue, really, but she really, that's mark of an incredible actor.
Yeah.
Because she just emoted and you just knew what she was feeling.
She
and
just conveyed strength and stoicism. And yet you could see what she was feeling behind it's sort of like the lack of expression sometimes said more than what a lot of actors say by overacting.
And I mean, she kind of dominated every scene she was in with Leonardo DiCaprio, the biggest celebrity in the world right now.
Yeah.
Like, she was fantastic. And you're right, she didn't say much. And I really, really liked that part near the beginning when, I think, was it Robert De Niro telling Leonardo DiCaprio, like, the Osage people don't talk too much, but that doesn't mean they're not bright. It's just that they are... what is it? Like, just listening.
We're always listening, yeah.
Taking in everything. And I feel like we need to learn from that a little bit.
That's
right. Because we're always yapping.
Yeah, and I think she, and even in falling in love with him, she knew what she was getting into. She knew he was greedy. She knew he wanted her money.
She called him a coyote the first time
they
met.
The heart wants what the heart wants. She did love him.
He could be very charming.
Yeah.
And something kind of interesting is Ernest Burkhart in the book, and I mean in real life, was only 25 years old, but of like 47-year-old Leo was playing him, And I don't think the age really made that much of a difference.
No, I don't. But he had a youthful. He had just come back from the war. And
yeah.
So he just kind of seemed youthful somehow.
Yeah. So I think it worked out. But it is interesting how different the ages were.
And I think Leonardo DiCaprio and Robert De Niro were both at their best. I mean, they both, I thought, did a really, really good job. And I think sometimes they. Well, I don't know. I think De Niro at least sometimes kind of takes some parts that aren't using his talents to...
Dirty Grandpa.
Yeah.
Papa has some other thoughts on this.
But I thought they both were really good.
I thought they were both great, but Leonardo DiCaprio, this is just a warning, Leo. Just, you're playing yourself and you're becoming Robert De Niro. Robert De Niro has only played himself for the past 40 years and going back to Goodfellas and... It's okay. It's perfectly fine. And you know my theory on that. Brad Pitt plays himself. You know, these folks.
You're a resident hater.
Well, that's not a hater. It's just they're so famous. You expect them to be a certain
I think DiCaprio actor. Transforms in his characters.
He does, except this time, I don't know. There was something about, maybe it was the length of time they took to make the movie. You could tell he gained some weight in some of the scenes. He had less weight in some of the others. It was just an odd...
I think it may have had to do with the fact that his character was so... just kind of one-dimensional. I mean, he was charming and in some scenes, but like you said, he was not bright.
Yeah.
He wasn't a terribly interesting person.
No,
and
I mean...
So it's hard to act...
That's true. I mean, every other scene he's in, like in the pool hall or drinking or playing cards or something, just not working.
I mean, at the beginning he said, what was it? He loves money and women and that's about it. And there wasn't much depth to him.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously there was.
And the thing is, it's like, if you criticize actors for kind of playing themselves, then I think the only actors that you can really hold up as outstanding are the ones who take completely different roles each time. And sometimes those actors are criticized for playing to the Academy or something, for intentionally taking roles where they're, you know, that's Oscar bait or whatever.
It's funny, I'm not a fan because he's an Eagles fan, but Bradley Cooper comes to mind, you know, American Sniper, Star Is Born, and now he's coming out in Maestro. I mean, well, those are three different roles. Actually,
but I think DiCaprio does the same thing.
Revenant.
No.
He had 12 lines of dialogue in that.
Revenant, yes, but he the Aviator. What else is he in? Titanic? No, I don't know. He does different things.
He does, yeah.
There was enough room on that door.
There definitely was
Wolf
enough room
of Wall
on that door.
Street.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. He is.
I'm just saying, it was just a message from me to Leo directly.
No, I know. Because like
you're just looking out for
his
career.
He has to be careful. He's going down that road. He's not as young as he used to be. So
I get what you mean, too. Like, he's not totally at the playing himself, but like he's getting there.
Yes.
But De Niro, you think, was playing himself?
Yes.
I thought De Niro was better.
He has no choice at this point.
I thought he was better because he came across as somebody who was so
charming.
Nice to the Osage and just looking out for them and just so protective of his family and just such a good guy. And yet underneath, you just knew he was plotting and just... a really bad person. And I hope I'm not giving too much away, but
it's fine. It's been out a while.
Anybody who sees it, pretty quickly you're going to catch on to who the good guys and the bad guys are.
Well, and one of the...
Oh, go ahead.
And one of the most menacing scenes of Mr. De Niro's was when near... I think it was like 3/4 of the way into the film, they have him like opening up this dance studio he paid for and sponsored for the Osage people. Just like, oh, he's such a sweet grandpa. Like, he loves us so much. And then I think that scene is in between two of some like incredibly violent, grotesque parts of the film. Super well directed.
Yeah, he definitely choreographed all the violence and all the terrible things that were happening. And not just to the Native Americans. It was just, you know, just a bad scene all around.
And the fact is, and the book goes into more detail on this, but there were a lot of other murders by a lot of other people. I mean, it wasn't just that this one conspiracy. It really was just a rash of people who showed up in town and married into the tribe and... stole.
I know, it's terrible.
Awful.
And also, just a note on Jason Isbell for your music
fans.
Oh,
yeah, he was in this.
He was quite good. He was really good as one of the husbands of one of the sisters of Lily Gladstone's character. And at first you think he's bad. Then you realize, no, he actually wasn't. But he was caught up in something bigger than him, and he couldn't fight it. Or he tried to fight it, but he didn't win.
Yeah, so. I wonder how he was cast in this.
Yeah, it's interesting.
So
I didn't know
random.
He didn't realize he was an actor. He's so busy making music, you know?
Yeah, and then Jesse Plemons, he did a good job. He was not in this movie that much. I've always been a fan of him. I know you guys like him in Fargo, but you don't love him in anything else.
Yeah,
really, right?
But he was really good in this because it called for that kind of quiet, strong, silent type.
Yeah, I finally will admit that he was cast very well in this.
I agree. And someone who was not cast well in this, I think this is the only flop, Brendan Fraser.
Oh,
he was in a different movie. My guy was banging on like the table, being this big lawyer man. I don't know. He just seemed like he was in a different place.
I think he did a pretty good job with the role, but he stood out too much. Maybe that was intentional, but he didn't really fit in.
I agree with that. So let's talk about the direction now, since we have not talked about that yet, and I think that's a big part of this. Do we think that Martin Scorsese still got it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Again, 3.5 hours when I heard that, even though I admire Scorsese and his movies, I thought, oh, that's just this is such an ego trip to make people sit through a 3.5 hour movie. But he pulled it off. I mean, I think what the movie needed to be that length to get across what he wanted.
You.
Yeah. And it was beautifully shot, well acted, good pace despite the length.
Yeah. And he did such a good job with handling, respecting the Osage people. And they, he worked with the community in Oklahoma. They shot the entire thing in Oklahoma. You can tell. This movie looks so good. This is his most Western-like film, though it's not a Western at all, in my opinion. But, you got people wearing cowboy hats, and you got,
feel. It's kind of like the Old West is ending, yeah.
That's very true, yeah. But, lots of landscapes and beautiful horizons.
Yeah, and you know me, that's one of my themes, the time, right? As times are changing, you see, the motor cars and the cowboys and the horses and oil is changing the landscape, literally, right? And so it's a fascinating take on that. And I thought that was great. I mean, I think he's such a student of cinema history that he grew up on movies that were epics, that were 3 hours long and, whatever. And so to make something like this must feel really good to be able to have that the means to do so, and he knew what to do exactly. Every shot, every scene was wonderful. It was beautiful.
Very one of the best shots in a Scorsese or in cinema history in general. Already there are a few in this film, including the one near the beginning when the Native Americans first find oil. It is my gosh, it gives you chills just thinking about it. And then there are a few scenes at the very end of the film.
Last scene, yes.
Brings tears to my eyes.
How do we feel about the very last, the way he ended it?
Oh, it was amazing. Okay, so if you're listening to this and haven't seen it for some reason, turn it off. But let's talk about the last 15 minutes of this movie. Jack White is randomly in it. He does a great job. But how do we like the ending?
It's kind of you're kind of I don't know about y'all, but I was thinking, how are they going to end this? How are they going to end whenever there's an epic, everything from Giant to I don't know, Ten Commandments. Well, you kind of know how that one is.
Yes, funny. We've read the book.
Yes, exactly. But I was thinking, okay, there's half an hour left to go, and you're thinking, okay, well, how are they going to wrap this up? Because it wasn't wrapped up in a tidy way, because you couldn't do it in a way that was any kind of resolution.
I know most movies would just end with a few title cards, like, this is what Molly Burkhart actually looked like.
Yeah, and then, they'll just say, and
died and whatever.
Yeah, exactly. What they ended up doing was, you're on the set, looked like Radio City Music Hall or something, and there are people doing a radio show. TV wasn't quite around yet. And so they were doing a radio show with all the sound effects, and they talk about a newspaper and you heard typing, and they talk about, somebody had a drinking problem and you heard clinking of ice in a glass. And I thought it was really well done, because even that showed almost like the translation of what you just saw, what you experienced, and in their case, it was history, and it already had become a form of media, it was part of the the popular culture, if you will.
And the way the story was spreading across the country. I mean, here right. it was in New York, and Oklahoma was so far away, but they were telling this really bizarre story to the national audience.
And this was actually based on something that they would do during, like, J. Edgar Hoover's time with the FBI and everything, because he wanted to promote how awesome the FBI is and how we're getting work done. But it's just kind of ironic and just kind of not embarrassing, but a bit embarrassing, just how, like, all of these awful people that we follow throughout the film, they did get time in prison, but none of them died in prison. And it was just like, I don't know, like, they weren't as successful as they may have seemed to the public.
Well, that's the thing. And you wonder what the whole point of it was. It was pretty pointless, because even if they didn't end up and die in prison, they ended up, I don't know about penniless, some of them did. And
I was glad, though, to find out. I mean, I remember being
I'm glad there was justice
that they actually did, yeah, send them to jail. I mean, it wasn't like some of these cases in the, like, the civil rights movement where these the people who are the whites in the area basically do these awful things and get away with murder. In this case, the federal government and the local, I guess, law enforcement did send some of these guys to prison.
Yeah, yeah, but they should have had sentences for life. I don't know.
Well, it's something, because the last third of the movie is really about the procedural drama of being in a courtroom. Not too different than Oppenheimer, you know, where
I know.
Which was interesting. Yes. And again, you think, oh, let's show another atomic bomb. There were two of them, you know, but it's like there's only so much action you have. That's really hard to do. I mean, just like Christopher Nolan did in that film, Scorsese did in this one, where how many courtroom scenes have you seen, you know, and yet it seemed very realistic what was happening, because it was based on what actually happened. So.
And I loved when Scorsese came out. I know it was kind of like goofy, or not goofy, but just kind of, I don't know. Some people probably may not love, like, how Scorsese ended the film narrating himself, but it is such a, like, personal, he cares so much about the project, and I thought it was special for him to end it. And I loved, like, the very end when they were talking about Molly and how, like, she remarried and died, and then he read the obituary and all. Yeah, I don't know.
In a way, it seemed more respectful, I think, of these people.
It was.
And you really kind of felt like you wanted to be told how their life ended instead of just read a couple of sentences on the screen.
I agree. And then the very final scene was this beautiful drone shot, or maybe crane shot, I don't know, of the Osage people dancing, and it looked like a flower. Oh, and it was so good.
It was so moving.
Good. Just beautiful. I think one of the most moving scenes for me was when Molly's mother dies. Do you remember how beautiful that was?
She sees the people coming to guide her.
And she, like, goes to them. I thought that was the most sweet, beautiful. Yeah, I thought that was so respectful.
I think you were getting popcorn at the time.
I think you were. It was. We got to rewatch it just so you can see that scene. And also, you guys know who did the score, right?
No, I don't.
The late Robbie Robertson.
Yes, Robbie Robertson. Yeah.
Yes.
And it was
has he passed away?
He died, yeah.
Really? Okay.
A few months after the movie came out. Okay. Or right before the movie came out.
Right before, yeah.
Gosh, okay.
But the score was really interesting, because the very first third, there was so much percussion, so much music. It was very lively. And then the last two thirds, I think it was just like silent basically for most of it.
It was very quiet for a Scorsese movie. Very low key.
No Rolling Stones.
But it fit perfectly. I mean, it was, it was a kind of a quiet story in a way.
It definitely was. It was a quiet story, yet incredibly brutal.
Yes.
No. Wow. Do you guys want to get to ratings? Because we've talked long.
Sure.
We've talked almost as long as this movie is.
Oh my goodness.
No, I'm just kidding. It's only been 20 minutes. But how many flowers would we give Killers of the Flower Moon? I can start. I would give this film 4.5. I could see it going to 5 or 4 when I rewatch it. I was just such a big fan. And I mean, there were a few parts, I think, that kind of, you know, I wasn't totally like into, just because it was a pretty long movie. But I thought it was so good overall. Can't really think of anything to change. Besides Brendan Fraser, he did not need to be there.
And I'd probably give it a 4.5, 2.
That's okay.
Sorry. Because it wasn't perfect. I mean, there were some parts that probably could have been cut, and it had faults, but it was a really well-told story, and everything about it was top-notch, from the acting to the direction to the music to everything. So really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And I give it a 4.5 for the main reason that I'd like to see it again. And it probably will go to a 5 maybe, because it's so dumb me criticizing anybody in movies, because, you know, they know what they're doing. But at the same time, I don't know what you would cut, you know, because if this is the story that he wanted to tell, he told it. And very well done. And just one, go back to Barry Corbin, the great Barry Corbin, Texas's own. He plays a real small supporting role as the Undertaker. And I thought he was really good, because it was similar to his No Country for Old Men, you know, role where, you know, he was...
He was in that too.
Yeah, he was Ellis, remember? He was the guy, he was his uncle.
Yes.
And just like, you needed that centered presence, you know. In that movie, he was kind of telling it like it was. And this one he was too. He was like, hey, you know what, that he was being accused of cheating the white person, just like he was cheating the Native American. And guess what? He was, you know, because he
was cheating everybody.
But he pointed out that at least he was working for it, as opposed to everybody else who was just, you know, working at not working, if you will. So anyway, just an FYI on that.
Kind
one.
Of rough logic or whatever.
Yes. Oh, and we didn't even talk about those awful doctors or the insulin or any of that, which is just kind of a crazy coincidence that Molly was one of the first 5 people in the world who got to use this insulin treatment. It showed how wealthy the Osage people were then, that they would have the opportunity to have insulin. But yeah, we don't even need to get into all that. You guys have seen that for yourself. So that was our discussion on Killers of the Flower Moon. Do you guys have any final thoughts?
I think, if you have a chance to see it in the theater, and if not, catch it when it's on Apple. It's certainly worth it.
Definitely. And try to watch the whole thing in a night. Don't split it up into like 4 days. That's unnecessary. You can binge watch a show in 3.5 hours. You can watch this movie.
Yeah. Give yourself, just get some snacks and just get comfortable, and you'll be surprised by how quickly the time goes by.
I agree.
You don't want to Far Away Downs it?
Oh my heavens. I'm not going to watch that. Do not make me watch that.
Stay tuned for our next podcast on Far Away Downs.
No. Follow us on Instagram at Strange Love of Media. Visit our website, strangelovemovies.com. And yeah, it was pretty special getting to see another Scorsese film in theaters with y'all. I think the last one we saw in theaters was also my first Scorsese movie, which was Hugo. And we also saw that AMC Stonebriar, so just kind of crazy how things have changed.
Yes, you've grown up a little bit since then.
Just a little bit, and just a few inches. Bye, guys.